Oh, hello there. So glad you could come along. I am the Dream Finder.
We've gathered here tonight around the fire.
We are now conducting our final systems check.
Our library is well stocked with priceless first editions. Only ghost stories, of course.
And now, the show that has the whole town cooking.
WDW Radio, your information station.
Over the past few weeks, I've been incredibly fortunate and grateful to take you behind the scenes at Walt Disney Imagineering, giving you an inside look at the people, like Zsolt Hormé, and the place and process during a very special tour of Imagineering that I was invited to share last week. And in both of those episodes and the video that I shared from inside Walt Disney Imagineering, which you are normally not allowed to do, we explored the incredible history and legacy of Imagineering. And this week, we look to the future and to the vision of what's next, and who better to explore that than the person at the very top. And my very special guest this week is Bruce Vaughn, the Chief Creative Officer of Walt Disney Imagineering. And what was supposed to be a quote-unquote traditional interview very quickly and naturally evolved into something more personal, candid, and I think inspiring. And I am so grateful that I hit record when I did, because what followed is a rare, honest, one-on-one conversation about the people, the purpose, and the path forward for Imagineering. So I'm excited this week for you to come with me, not just inside Imagineering, but inside the heart and mind of the person helping guide the next generation of magic and magic makers. Hello, my friend, and welcome to WDW Radio, your guide to the Disney parks, movies, and experiences around the world. I am Lou Mangiello, and this is show number 838. And whether it is your first time here or you've been with me since the very beginning, welcome, welcome back, welcome home. Because for more than 20 years, I've shared my love of Disney through the podcast, live video, events, cruises, and our incredible community. And I am so grateful to you that you're here, because you're not just a listener, you are part of the WDW Radio family. Couple of quick things before we dive in. Come be part of the community and conversation over in the WDW Radio Clubhouse at wdwradio.com/clubhouse. Join me this and every Wednesday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern for WDW Radio Live on Facebook and YouTube. And make sure you turn on notifications, because you never know when or from where I might be live next. I'm going to skip the Disney Trivia Contest question this week, give you an extra week to answer last week's, as I'm going to be traveling to Hollywood and Southern California again, including Walt Disney Imagineering, on our next WDW Radio Adventures by Disney trip. You can learn more about upcoming events, group cruises, and trips over on the events page at wdwradio.com. Please connect and chat with me on social. I am at Lou Mangiello on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And don't forget to sign up for my free weekly email newsletter at wdwradio.com/newsletter. And when you do, I will send you a free copy of my 102 Things to Do at Least Once in Walt Disney World book. And if you want to turn what you love into what you do, if you are a creator, an entrepreneur, or solopreneur, please join me this October in Walt Disney World for my Momentum Weekend Workshop, a hands-on, 50-person, 4-day, one-room event to help you build real momentum in your business and brand. You can learn more and get your tickets at loumangiello.com/momentum. But don't wait, we are more than 70% sold out, but you can still take advantage of the $100 off early bird special going on now. And if you want to bring a little bit of Disney magic to your next event, conference, brand, or team, I'm a keynote speaker on storytelling, customer experience, and creating memorable moments inspired by the Disney parks and leadership lessons from Walt Disney that are practical and tactical and you can put into practice right away. You can learn more, book me to speak, or set up a call with me at loumangiello.com. And when you're ready to book your next Disney vacation, please visit my friends over at mousefantravel.com for completely free expert and personal planning, just like I have trusted for more than 17 years. And if you enjoy the show, and I hope that you do, please rate, review, and more importantly, share it with a friend. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this week's episode of the WDW Radio Show. As I teased a little bit during this episode's intro, this week's show is a little different, and I think in the best possible way. Because when I sat down with Bruce Vaughn, the chief operating officer of Walt Disney Imagineering. I was prepared to do what I've done literally hundreds of times over the past 20 years on the podcast, which is conduct a very well-researched, prepared, and structured interview with a narrative arc and a journey I wanted to take Bruce on, and questions that I, you know, take a lot of time and care to craft. But what happened was unexpected, and I think a little fortuitous, because our conversation when Bruce walked in the door just started flowing naturally, candidly, and very authentically. And I quickly realized this was not going to be a typical interview. It was something that was much more personal, more reflective, and I think more revealing. So I did the only thing I could think to do, which was press record as quickly as I realized this was happening. And I'm so very grateful that I did, because what you are about to hear is clearly a very unscripted one-on-one conversation that I think brings out not just Bruce Vaughn's brilliant mind and visionary leadership, but I think his humanity and his humility and his humor, and really I think his deep passion for Imagineering, and more importantly, the people behind it. And we talk about everything from legacy to leadership, the power of emotion and shared experiences, I think what it really means to be an Imagineer, and where Imagineering and we as guests are headed next. So please come with me as we go inside Imagineering and inside the heart and mind of the man who is helping lead it into the future. So I invite you to pull up a chair and sit with me and Bruce in the secret, I never even knew it was there, offices of Walt Disney Imagineering, and join our conversation.
We wanted to put a little, because, you know, when I got back, we realized that many of the Imagineers had only been here for like 5 years or so. And I had been gone 7. So it hit me that they didn't have a real, that meant they probably joined around COVID. So they didn't have a really strong sense of the culture or the history, because, you know, as we know, during COVID, it's tough to really have the kind of shared culture that Imagineering is really so strong with. So we wanted to use the halls to sort of tell the story. So that as you walk through, you know, you'd see the legends, you'd see the history of how, you know, the work was done, and just celebrate, you know, the various expertise. We weren't done. There's a whole hallway of music that we have to still do and all this kind of stuff. And the writers, the steps going up to the writers have the, or sort of famous lines, the backside of water and all that stuff. But, you know, it should be a fun place and celebrate who we are. Well, 73 years. Pretty long time.
it's not lost on me, you know, walking in there, who has sort of walked those halls before. Right? I love how you embrace the history and the legacy and nostalgia while still working on what you're looking to do, what's next.
And that is what's key. And did you get to see a magical, the Walt Disney Magical Life? Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Yeah, what'd you think?
I loved it.
It's amazing, right?
I loved it.
And what it really reminded me when, you know, I came back, and it was underway already, so... But Tom Fitzgerald, you know, started showing me the script and the film, and it's just what a remarkable, I mean, talk about an entrepreneur and a risk taker and fearless, you know, and failed and, you know, just got right back up. And, you know, that is a spirit. We're talking a lot in Imagineering about this entrepreneurial mindset. It's like, you know, we're great at what we do, and we've done it for 73 years, but it doesn't mean you should rest on your laurels. That guy wouldn't. If he was alive today, God knows what he'd be doing. You know what I mean? And it's so inspirational. I'm also happy that we're a 100-year-old company, and we still honor our founder. You know, that doesn't always happen, and we should. And that's what I, you know, for those who love him already, I think that film will be a great reminder of just how amazing he was. And then I think for people who don't, it should hopefully be a point of inspiration. But I've been using that a lot with the Imagineer, saying, this is it, man. Just rekindle this spirit with, you know, like you said, an eye towards the world we live in, which is becoming, you know, it's completely different than what it was. But everybody wants, we're still about emotion. Our product is emotion at the end of the day. That's all there is to it. Yes, we build incredible things and put on shows and do fireworks and drones. But at the end of the day, we're all about, you know, a certain set of emotions that we want people to feel. And fortunately for us, they're the best kind of emotions, because Walt was absolutely intent that through design, you could design happiness. That through design, you can bring out the best in people. That's why he was probably going to go on to Epcot, was going to be an actual city. Because I think he was totally convinced that from his experiments with the parks that, look how everybody behaves. And it's true today. You watch people, if those same people crossed each other in any street in a city, they wouldn't smile at each other, be friendly, help each other, hold a door, whatever it is. And it's all because of the environment and the design. And it's pretty remarkable. And we're very fortunate that we get to work on that, you know, of all the things, you know.
I was amazing. Just saying, Nicole, too, I think when people go to that attraction, which I almost hate calling an attraction because it's,
yeah,
it's so much.
It's something else. I agree with you.
You have to take a holistic view of it and what it represents, not just having him represented in that figure. But I think you're right, introducing him to a new generation of people who, you know, there might be a little bit of a disconnect between Walt, the human being, and the father and the man and the
A lot of people, it's a studio name, I think. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it's so much more than that. And it's a good reminder. I mean, I did get, you saw the John Hench, I'm sure, you know. I was lucky enough in the first years I worked there, John was still there. So not only did you get to, you know, mentor with Marty, who had, you know, we say touched the cloth of Walt, but John was phenomenal. He was like the philosopher, you know, and he had this office upstairs, you know, and he wore the cravat and he was amazing. And when I finally got the nerve to go up and just say, and he was so welcoming, and it was just amazing. I mean, because, you know, he hung with Salvador Dali and he, you know, he read palms and but he was just like, oh, this is the kind of people Walt surrounded him with, you know, himself with. This is what you do. And it's still there. And this is what I love. And he was one of the main reasons, because, you know, I heard you used to be a lawyer.
Yeah.
I went to law school for 3 months. You know that? So I dropped out. I found law school very interesting. My dad was a lawyer. But a great man, by the way. I loved him. But then he told me he didn't even want to be a lawyer. I was like, great, Dad, thanks. But, you know, because I just got enamored with entertainment when I saw Star Wars at 12 years old. And that just changed me forever. And I just wanted to be a creator like George Lucas or Spielberg. And... so when I ended up at Disney, I had never been to a theme park, but never went. I mean, when I became an Imagineer, I didn't even know what the word was. So it was very weird for me. But as I got more and more immersed into what the product is and what the process is and the people, it began to really, you know, become like, oh, wow, this is incredible. And John was a big piece of that because I didn't realize, you know, you hear theme park, you hear the stuff, but there's a deep philosophy. And I think Joe Rohde's the closest thing to that now. You know what I mean? He's you know, I call him Professor Rohde, right? We still have him as an advisor mentoring people because he's so good and passionate. But that's the way it was. And it's just, you realize that there is something noble, not to overblow it, but there's something noble about what we do when we do it right, you know, because it really, to be a source of joy, to be a source of shared experience. And I'm a very optimistic person. You know, even COVID, I try to find silver linings. Mm-hmm. And I think the one that one of them that I can point to is that we all, you know, came out of that, I think, appreciating just how amazing and valuable shared experiences are in the real world, you know, IRL. It's like, you know what I mean? It really is important. And you want to do them in places where you can just let go and be happy. And we're one of the places, and, you know, maybe, you know, well, we're several places around the world. And what I love is, you know, when I came back, I left pretty much opening day of Shanghai, you know, when I took my little hiatus. And I came back 7 years later, and to see how mature all the parks are, to see how everything, everywhere, what really resonated me was wherever we go, and we modify slightly to reflect the culture and the behaviors, but it's really slight when you really think about it. Wherever we go, the humans act the same. They respond the same way. And that's pretty amazing. You know what I mean? When you can see the same sort of joy and desire to hang out together. And it's just opening that child within everybody. When you do that, I think the world's a better place. So, you know.
Yeah, COVID definitely let us all recognize and sort of remember, maybe not take as much for granted, just how special and important this place is, not just to you guys, but obviously to us as guests.
Well, I'll tell you, that's something I also remind every Imagineer. It's like, because, you know, often Imagineers are also, you know, huge fans of all this stuff, but we're doing it for the guests. Now, it's great when it can resonate that exactly what you want is exactly what a guest want. But, you know, at the end of the day, we are the designers, and we've got to reflect what we know will resonate with the guests. And it isn't always what the guests want because, you know, you don't always know. You know, I can't tell a chef, you know, a Michelin star chef what to cook for me because it's like, they got to dream that up. But, you know, when they get it right, you're like, whoa, didn't expect, this is amazing. And we're the same way. So it is something that when we come to work, I always remind, this is for the guests, not for us. And if that, again, if that happens to coincide, great, but it doesn't matter. But we also have to evolve, and you brought that up, you know, it's one of the hardest parts of the job is you move something, you know what I mean? And it's like, and I know why. This actually happened once. We moved to moved to Churro Cart at Disneyland once, many years ago. Literally, Churro Cart on the hub. And they moved it like around the corner. And it was as if it was invisible. Mm-hmm. They couldn't find it. The guests were, and they were so angry because they were like, no, because it's ritual. Yeah. It literally is ritual. And I have places like this. I love new things, but I also, especially because I travel so much for work, when I go home and I have a house in Sonoma, but I live in LA, I go to the same places all the time. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because they know me and I want the same thing. And God forbid they don't have the thing on the menu. You know what I mean? So I get it. Now, at the same time, I am, when they happily surprise me with like, oh, introduce something new. And it's actually as good or better is what you strive for. You go, okay, this is fun. You're taking me on a journey and you respect the fact that, you know, I have so much passion about this. And so, but that is something we face a lot as Imagineers. It's like, okay, we're going to move this and, you know, and we know it's a tough order is to deliver something that is going to be, you know, hopefully better in its own way.
Right. I think implicitly trust Imagineering, but I always say, if you want to make Disney fans lose their minds, tell them you're going to change something.
Yeah.
Right. Because you have to sort of, you have that delicate balance of, you know, how do we replace something that you know means so much to somebody?
Yes, that's right.
But for something that you know is not just for a next generation of fans and their children.
That's right.
But is going to be an improvement on the overall guest experience. We may or may not be, you know, talking about Frontierland. And
I have a list. No, I'm kidding. no, actually, and most of it's great. Most of it's great. And I think, you know, and again, I always, you know, some people get very frustrated internally in the company with stuff. I see it as passion. I'm like, it's coming from a good place. Yeah. The ones I care about are the ones who come from a place of passion. And you know, and we try, we're doing a few things. I mean, you know, we try to get out there. People want to kind of get visions of what we're doing. We're trying to take them on the journey of, I always say, the early phases of our projects, especially the big attractions and lands, that is not for the faint of heart, because the ideas are going to change a lot. Mm-hmm. And you cannot fall in love with something. It'll be like, so when we release images like a D23 or something, you know, everybody's nervous because we're like, because it's imprinted, that's what you're building. We're like, kind of where we're going, you know what I mean? And you know, when we try to be careful so that whatever we deliver has, again, the emotional impact of that. But don't go in, and I'm trying more and more to say, let's create something that implies a scale. It implies, you can begin to feel, how is this going to make me feel? And that's what we try to do in the beginning, because it is a complex process and it's a complex product. Mm. And, you know, and luckily I have entertainment under me as well. So that's our nimble, quick, get out there, you know, do things in shorter time frame stuff. But these bigger things, you know, 3 years down the road, everything, you know, suddenly, like, oh, wait, this changed. And, you know what I mean? And so, but we also love the idea of taking the fans along on the journey because it's fun, you know? And so we just try to keep that message out there that just go with us. You know what I mean? You know, go with us. This is early. It's like, you know, trust me, there are Imagineers who are 1,000 times more passionate because they kind of knew what it could have been. Mm. But it's just like filmmakers or anybody, what's left on the cutting room floor, you know, the guests will never know. The audience will never know, but they still feel for it. They're like, oh, that would have been a great scene. But you know, it's like, it doesn't matter if it came together. Great. So it's something that we're always playing with Monica. It's like, okay, what can we release? What can we not? And I think I don't know what you feel about the, we call it Imagineering YouTube stuff that we're doing. I mean, I think that kind of opening up and allowing in that way is really good and fun, you know, because it is an exciting place. You know, it really is. I love every day I wake up. I mean, I couldn't be happier to be back. I wasn't gonna, you know, I had no intention of coming back. It was, you know, Josh DeMauro sort of called me and invited me back and said, you know, this is going to be the most amazing time in Imagineering history. And I said, well, I think I kind of did that the first time, you know, but he was right. It is. And I knew I would enjoy it, but I didn't think I would like completely love it the way I do. It is just, and part of it might be, you know, having gone out and done other things, startups and, you know, things like this and learned a lot and evolved. Part of it might be, I'll be 60 this year. So, you know, you just get older and wiser and appreciate things differently. And you hone your craft too. So that makes it good. But it is just so exciting right now. I mean, just the amount of exciting work and the variety of work. You know, I'm someone who loves to switch gears all day long. You know what I mean? So it's kind of the perfect job for me, because on one hand I'll be talking about a cruise ship, and the other hand I'll be talking about a parade, and, you know, some attraction somewhere, and I'll be in China, and I'll be here, whatever. So it's super, super fun.
So a couple of quick things that I just took from what you said. First of all, I love the fact that you are aware of the granular stuff. The churro cart being moved. You're not so far removed from it that you recognize that that's important to people. You know, small things that change are important to people. And you keep talking about emotion. And I love the fact that you use the word love and feelings, because that's what this is all about. A lot of executives sometimes shy away from using terms like that. But that's why we feel the way we do about this place. That's why it was so sad for us when the parks closed for COVID, how special it was to be able to come back.
Yeah.
And why, you know, for better or for worse, the reactions that you see online do come from a place of passion and love for these things.
Yeah. And by the way, I happen to be executive by chance, I guess, because I never had these kinds of ambitions. I love creating things. I love working in teams to create. In fact, the part of this job that I can relate to, this is the only time I'll compare myself at all to Walt Disney, and I'm comparing myself to him, but it's something he said that I can relate to, is what I'll say, and it's in the show. When he was asked, do you draw a Mickey? No, I don't draw a Mickey. No, I don't do that. I'm like a little bee that goes around pollinates. That is my job. It literally is. Like, I could relate. I went, that is exactly it. No one idea is mine. In fact, I spend most of my time on the ones that need help. The ones that are going good, so great, you got it. And what I did learn about myself, though, is that I am able to sort of identify, okay, this is where you're, okay, just let's get back on track here and let's just do this. And it's super fun. I do, you know, and I love this and I wouldn't change it for the world. I do miss, because in my early days, I worked at the R&D group and we did, you know, a bunch of cool experimental stuff. Lucky the Dinosaur, the Muppet Mobile Lab, Turtle Talk with Crush, which started as a photo phone with Stitch and all this kind of stuff. And those were small, nimble teams that put things together. You're up all night, you're hanging out, you're not worried about anything else going on, and you're just focused. And that is like one of the funnest things you can ever do in your life, right? Now I get to see everything and I get to touch all the teams, and that's super fun too, but it's different, you know? And if I didn't get the reinforcement, and if other executives didn't tell me, no, this is what you should be doing, I'd probably be like, I want to go back to that. But there's a certain point where you go, no, this is my destiny. This is what I should be doing. And I'm not complaining, because it is awesome. But it is interesting. But there's no more greater joy for me than seeing an Imagineering team have those breakthroughs, helping them have those breakthroughs where you just know, we've got a few projects going on right now where we've crossed over certain, you know, milestones, and you just sit in some combination of the storytelling, whether it be the music, it might be just a certain thing, a scene or special effect or something, you go, oh, this is going to be great. I cannot wait for this to get in front of the guests. You know what I mean? Right. And you go, this is going to be like, because I love magic, I love illusions, and to have that moment where you just know even the greatest skeptic has suspended disbelief, because they're like, I don't know what's happening. This is awesome. You know? And that's what kids are. Right. You know, kids willingly suspend disbelief. They take a cardboard box and make something cool out of it. Adults, you know, we get skeptical, we get jaded. And when we get the whole family feeling that way, you know, from the grandparents down to the little kids, it's, you know, that to me, and there's moments, it could be in a parade, there's nighttime shows where you look at it and you go, this is going to be great. You know, they're not going to see it coming, and it's going to be amazing, and it's going to be repeatable. And that's the big joy for me. I mean, after this, I've recently restarted our illusions lab. Because I believe at the end of the day, emotion is our product and perception is one of our biggest tools. We use a lot of big technology. And when you're doing a Rise of the Resistance or a Tower of Terror, you have to have big machines and big technology. But it can be just as effective, you know. Look, it must have been what Walt and the original Imagineers felt when they first did Pepper's Ghost, you know, for the Haunted Mansion, because it's like, they're going to believe there's ghosts. You know what I mean? And it's just so cool when you get those things. And we still do a lot of that. And one of the ways we, special effects and illusions, because I used to do that as a cameraman, which is different because it's film and you can play with that. I think that is so core. And I'm going to go visit the one here. We have one in LA and one here. And that's one of my favorite moments, because it's these, just the minds that can take something, could be something small, whatever. But when you're looking at it going, wait a minute, what is that? How are you doing that? You know? And usually it's the simplest thing. So it is that combination. And you're right, it is the littlest details too. In fact, what I love, what I fell in love with Disney was actually the attention to detail.
Because you were not a Disney person as a kid.
No, my father never took me. I mean, and my mother too. I watched the Walt Disney, the repeats of the Magical World, Wonderful World of Disney on Sunday. I forget, there was two of them. And so that was it. We never went to the parks. We never did anything until I became an Imagineer. The company I worked for got acquired. And I was told, you're an Imagineer. I was an English major. So actually, I literally said this to the HR person. I said, I'm an English major. That is not a word. She said, you don't know what this is? Or, I said, no, I don't know. Now, remind you, it was secret back then. Mm-hmm. It was sort of a secret. You know, it was more of a secret thing. But so I had never, my first time I went was alone at 27 years old. I told this story, it was so funny. They flew me to California to join Imagineering during the 2-week orientation where you learned all these words like berm and all this stuff. I was like, oh, this is, I have to admit, it was very interesting. I was like, wow, this is really, they've put a lot of thinking into this thing. And they said, and inevitably you get the question, what's your favorite attraction? I said, I don't know, I've never been to it, but I still hadn't gone to the park. So they did, this is crazy, because you know, there is like Disneyland right down the road. Nope, they flew me here. I guess because they want me to see the big one. I have no idea. So my first was Walt Disney World, 1993, just walking around, with a list that Tom Fitzgerald and Marty had made saying, you got to do this, you got to do this, got to do this. And mind blown. This is a very true story. I literally call. I was one of the lucky people in the world, I've learned, that had a great childhood, great parents. And I did call them literally. I was at the Wilderness Lodge. And in those days, you picked up the phone and called. And I said, Mom and Dad, you were almost the perfect parents. And they said, what happened? I said, if you had taken me when I was 9 or 10 years old on Peter Pan, it would have blown my mind. You know what I mean? And it blew my mind at 27 because I could picture like what it must be like to be a kid on that thing where you fly out this window and there's London. I was like, oh my God. And again, there was no video of this stuff or anything. So I didn't know. I was like, what am I getting onto? A little pirate ship? And it's like, oh my God, we're flying over London. Look, I'm just like, holy crap.
You were on the journey you were supposed to be on.
Yeah,
right.
And, that's and, right. Thank
and
you.
I love the, you know, as long as you're talking about Walt and some of the parallels, mm-hmm. I think one, you know, like Walt, he took his artists and animators and said, you're going to be an Imagineer. Yeah. And I said, what the heck's an Imagineer? But you're a storyteller, right? You're a storyteller. And I love the fact that you take sort of a filmic approach to storytelling. This
like they
these
did.
Immersive, multidimensional, now even with, you know, the greater blessing of additional technology, being able to tell these very personal stories for every guest that walks through the gate.
I've often been told by other Imagineers that the fact that I didn't grow up, you know, always wanting to be an Imagineer has brought a perspective that allows me to probably stand more in the guest shoes than even they could, because it's what they wanted to create. Not that, again, that they'd be wrong, but I definitely came in where it was like, okay, you know, those are the guests, these are the creators, you know, and how do we bring this together? And they're probably right that little critical distance, I would call it, has allowed me to always, we create motion and I want emotion in the product, but someone at some point does have to bring a little adult into the room. Because one of the things I also know about Imagineering, I half jokingly say that the most important piece of furniture in my office is the couch, because there's a lot of therapy going on. And you want it to be. It is not a problem. A creative organization, and I'm not just talking about the designer, everybody there is creative. Our lawyers are creative. I mean, it's just like everybody is there because they feel the same way about, you know, what I want to do with my life, and this is the product I want to create. So they all have this innovative, creative side. And to do the product we do, I need those teams to mostly be in what I call child mode. You have to know what it feels like to be a kid. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we're not going to succeed. And I think Walt said it was a 9-year-old or something. He had a specific age. Everybody has a 9-year-old. I think that's what it was. I probably got that wrong. But it's, you know, it's that. And that does mean, though, if people are in child mode, you're going to get a tantrum. You're going to get emotional swings. You're going to get, you know, passion, you know. And, you know, a big part of my job is guiding that back. And, you know, I call it, you know, a lot of Imagineers are like lasers. They're very, very good, pointed in the right direction, incredibly effective. You know, not, they're going to spin around and blind people. You know what I mean? It's just going to be crazy. So part of my job is like, focus the laser, you know, let's get over there. Focus the laser here, let's get over there. And when you do that, they do things that, you know, I certainly couldn't do, that, you know, probably very few people in the world could do. But there is the need for a sense of guidance in this. Otherwise, honestly, if they weren't super emotional, super passionate, and able to tap into this child mode, we just wouldn't have the product we have. You know, it doesn't mean it's juvenile. It just means it evokes that wonder that you have as a child about the world.
And I love the fact that you've spoken about the power of reverse mentoring.
Yeah.
It's not just sort of a leader teaching somebody new that comes in, but their willingness to sort of learn.
That is super important. We have the great benefit, again, 73 years. And one of the first things I did when I came back, and actually Justin Moore had asked me to do this, I probably would have done it anyway, but he said, let's get, a lot of people retired when I was away who were and it was like, let's bring them back under some sort of advisory thing and make sure they mentor, not to do the projects. We need the next generations of Imagineers to do the projects because that's how you cut your teeth and that's how you learn. But the wisdom is super important. And I do agree with you. The reverse mentoring is something that actually came. Peter Gruber, you know who Peter Gruber is? You know, from Batman, all this kind of stuff. I met him through UCLA. I used to teach at UCLA, immersive design and stuff. And he was teaching there too, a producer program. And we just hit it off and he became a mentor. But he's the one who taught me that. Because I actually went to him and I said, I want you to mentor me. You're very wise. He's actually very clever. And he said, we're going to reverse mentor. You're going to mentor me and I'm going to mentor you. And I actually said, what do I got to give you? He goes, you're young, you have a different lens, you grew up differently from me, and I need to not just become some old guy. I was like, wow, this is so cool. So I began to implement that. Early on, I would grab a young audio, Asaklab was actually this young, guy from UCLA. I brought him in as an intern, and then we had this older guy who's now retired, Steve Kadar, who was an audio guy, and Asa, at that time, had already grown up using, devices and pads, and Steve was still up on a board calling shots and doing all this stuff. And Asa just came to me, and he's, I was 20 or something, and he said, we could run the whole thing off of this iPad. And I was like, you can run the whole thing off the iPad? He goes, yeah, I can walk around and trigger it. And I was like, well, show me. He did. Steve at first was like, no, you know what I mean? And then it was like, wait a minute, it's easier, it's better. I just told him, I said, learn from Asa. You know what I mean? But there was a lot of that Asa didn't know about exactly how to get the sound through the right levels because Steve had done it for so long that kind of experience that you only get by doing and doing. I had a teacher who said it's just, coins in the meter at some point. You know what I mean? You just got to keep pointing. There's only time can get you to a certain place. It's like learning an instrument or something. I told you the story the other day. And did you find the name? I was listening to, I think it was probably NPR or something years ago. It was I love jazz. And there was this trumpet player and he was this obviously old man at the time. And the interviewer was saying, and he was, I think he was in his 80s. And he was like, so, you've been doing this for so long. How do you challenge yourself? And he goes, well, my teacher challenges me. And he's like, teacher? And he goes, yeah, I've never stopped taking lessons. And it was like, but you're like a virtuoso master. He goes, you just never stop taking lessons. And there's a certain point where you get so good, you can't push yourself anymore. You need someone else to hold a mirror up and say, try this. And that's what a lot of reverse mentoring does. The people who don't have the experience should tap into the experience of those who do. But those who have a lot of experience should recognize that I might be calcifying here, I should probably absorb some of this.
As opposed to, this is the way we've been doing it for 70 years, which you get complacent and sort of get that mindset.
And that's what the big thing that I've been talking to the teams about is, it's fine to start and say, we do know a way that could be successful. But I've been really pushing on this idea of curiosity, and it was a big Walt thing about curiosity, right? Stay curious. And it's just have the curiosity to say, but what if we didn't do it that way? We can always go back to it. We know we could do it that way. What if we didn't? And I'm a big one for integrated teams. And this includes, by the way, the park operators, safety. One of the things, too, that I didn't like when I came back, there was a bit of a sense of victim. And I was like, don't be a victim. There is no big bad guy. Power is something you give. You know what I mean? If no one has power over you, you give that. And it's one of the things that, I talked to Josh about when I came back. I said, Imagineering is going to have a seat at the table. But again, I don't want the seat that says, we tell you what to do. It needs to be the seat that brings our expertise to it. But trust me, the people who operate these parks, the people that deal with the commercial and finance side of things, they also have tremendous expertise. What you have to do is respect when you are the expert, you know what I mean? And don't try to weigh in, you know, in a really strong way in an area that maybe you're not the expert, you know? Sort of like when you, if you go in and just tell your doctor, you know, just give me a shot here, my arm hurts. Like, no, last I checked, I'm the doctor, you know what I mean? Let me do a little analysis here. But we're doing a great job down here. It's really been a model, I have to say, of these integrated teams where we early on, when it can be a small, nimble team before you start, you know, deploying a lot of capital moving down the pipeline, come to some sticky decisions about this is what we're trying to do together and keep that locked and keep moving. And you can modify as you go. That is a real important thing. So I am a big team player. I believe in the integration. I believe in learning about what other people do, walk in their shoes. You know what I mean? Don't think you're going to be the expert, you know, but at least appreciate why decisions are made. And I think too often, I even hear this sometimes from the outside, where it's like, they're not letting Imagineering do da da da. They're cutting the budgets. That is not the case. I'm here right now telling you that is not the case. It is absolutely the case that we are in this together, that we all want the same thing. There are differences of opinions how we should get there. And that's a big part of my job, is to make sure that, you know, we're always at that table. But I also expect my Imagineering leaders to be at that table too and show up, you know, as the expert you are. And, you know, talk it through. And you know, I also have a big belief that constraint brings the best design. Mm-hmm. You know, don't think less money, less time, or whatever is going to end up in a worse idea. It won't. I actually firmly believe that when you're a designer, constraints are a gift, because it's going to force you to edit, it's going to force you to innovate, and you're actually going to get to a place that is much better than you would have gone if you had no constraints whatsoever.
Right, because there are the functional and operational and financial realities, but I do love, and I remember reading a quote that Bob Iger talked about, returning the creative decision-making to the creator.
That's important.
As you look forward to the future.
That is very important. Now, I do believe the creators should appreciate, we're a business, we're a public health company, you know, and we, you know, we're trusted with a lot of money flowing through, you know, Imagineering itself, by the way. And we owe it to our guests to make sure we give them, at the end of the day, it's got to be that emotional experience. It's got to be the wow. It's got to be, you know, stepping into the worlds that they want with the characters they want and all these kinds of things in a way that is truly worth the money they're spending. But, you know, mostly causing the emotional thing. But we do need to appreciate how the business works. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it is important, because that's how we're going to get it right. And so, you know, but he is right. And this is what I do see. I will say this. It is a creatively driven company. It is. And there's a lot of, but I also want to say, there's a lot of respect from the operations partners. They actually do defer, you know, often to, you know, this or this. Okay, that's going to be a little different than we thought. Might cost more, whatever. Okay, we're going to go with that if you really recommend that. And of course, I need, you know, I have a boss, Josh, who, you know, also weighs in on these things. But he has that mindset. Bob is brilliant. He has that mindset. By the way, Michael Eisner was that way. Michael had a great instinct for that. I mean, he would come in a room and be like, this is the thing. You know? I mean, this is the one thing you need to do. And it was great, you know. And so I think that's what you want in a company like Disney. You do need someone who has great taste and great creative instincts, because at the end of the day, that's what everybody is coming for. You know, it's that emotional experience, which is done in a creative way, in an innovative way. So, yeah.
Yeah. And even with all these, you know, emerging technologies, which are probably going to fundamentally change the Disney theme park experience, whether it's AI, VR, AR.
I'm very excited.
The Holotile 4 or whatever.
Oh, yeah, the Holotile, yeah. I'm very excited about AR and XR. Yeah. I think AR and XR, I don't have to keep this brief. I see you over here. This is deadly, because this is its whole world. You know, we have such a relationship with this thing. It pops up stuff. And I think when people look at your device, I'm guilty as well, you just go there. You forget. And we're all about the shared experience. Once it gets into glasses, which, by the way, there's also an inevitability to certain technologies that you, why fight it? I mean, that's just stupid. So I'm excited because it'll be like a heads-up display kind of situation where I won't forget that I'm in this park, that I'm with you, because I'll be looking and you'll always be there. I'm not going into something else. So I'm excited about the possibilities of layering, especially more customizable personal experiences. I'm excited that we, you know, have invested in Epic Games and that we are going to have an opportunity for certain guests to, you know, bridge those worlds and share those worlds and have a kind of relationship between that. Why not? You know what I mean? That's cool. And we have a way now to do it, or we will very shortly have a way to do it that won't be intrusive to guests who aren't, you know? And we're already experimenting with this stuff because I believe done right, and I think we can do this right. Well, I know we can. It's just we're going to iterate and we're going to try and we're going to keep doing it. It will actually be a further enhancement, you know, and it won't be a detriment. Right now, I think devices are a bit of a detriment. I do believe AI is going to be a big solution to this, because when you have natural speech and you just can talk to something and it can just talk back to you, again, it allows me to stay in the moment. This is fine when you're like, you're on a plane, you're sitting at home, and you're, I just want to play the New York Times games or Wordle or something. But when I'm with you, I want to be with you. Yeah. I mean, I don't even, you know, I always catch myself if I put it on the table, I'm like, I just should put that thing away. Because if it's there, you're like, you know what I mean? It's like Lord of the Rings. I just want that thing. So you just have to, like, you know, and just be with the people.
Yeah.
And that's what we have created, whether it be the cruise ships or the parks or whatever, created these places where the shared experience is, I think, it is truly, you know, magical. And it's, you know, I always feel like we end up with these cliches, but, you know, George Lucas said, and Tom Fitzgerald shared this with me, I wasn't on the first Star Tours, but he said they were worried about this one scene being sort of cliche. And George Lucas actually said to Tom, and I think it was Tony Baxter, but he said, you know, the cliches for a reason, they work. So anyway.
Well, the foundation's always going to be good storytelling, mm-hmm. and that's what WDI is based on.
It is absolutely true.
Yeah. Bruce, I had about 700 more questions I'd love to ask you. Hopefully we can do this again.
Well, you know the key to...
I'm really grateful for your time.
No, thank you. This is fun.
And yeah. I appreciate, from a guest perspective, me and my family, we appreciate everything that
great,
you guys do here.
Great. Where's your next visit?
I'm coming back to you.
Thank you once again for listening and, more importantly, being part of the WWO family and community. I am incredibly and sincerely grateful to you and for you. I know that your time is your most valuable commodity, and I appreciate you spending and sharing it with me. I hope you found some magic, a little bit of inspiration in this week's show. Huge thanks once again to Bruce Vaughn from Walt Disney Imagineering for his time, which I know is so very limited and so very valuable. I'd love to hear your thoughts about my conversation with Bruce over in the WW Radio Clubhouse at wwradio.com/clubhouse. And if you enjoyed this week's show, please help spread the word, share the show, and tell a friend. More importantly, remember to be kind, to choose the good. Have an amazing day and even better tomorrow. So until next time, I love and appreciate you. See ya.
Well, it sounds pretty good. In fact, that's just the right spirit.